Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Plenty to do here with you till 10 on Chris Thomas tonight. We'll get back into the Falcons conversation coming up. If you missed my conversation with Matt Verderam, great insight into the Falcons and the rest of the league as well. But right now on Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, hanging out with you till 10 on the WadeFord.com hotline. There is so many rumors surrounding the Atlanta Hawks. I wanted to enlist the help of one of my favorite insiders from Front Office Show and Lakers Nation, Trevor Lane. Trevor, let's start right here in Atlanta with so much to talk about. The Trae Young rumors are at their highest fever pitch they've ever been here in Atlanta about a potential trade before the trade deadline. They won today. Ironically enough, he did not play, and in the seven games before, they went 0-7 since he came back. Do you foresee this split between Trae Young and the Hawks as a fait accompli?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like that's the way this is headed. I hesitate to even call it a silver lining, but the benefit of Trae Young's injuries, you got a little bit of a sneak peek of what life can look like without Trae and figure out if that's going to be a good thing. Is that going to be a bad thing? Do the Hawks want to be the team to pay him on his next contract? And you know, we're still in small sample size territory. This team is very well structured to maximize Trae's strengths while minimizing his weaknesses. But right now, the weaknesses have been enough to where they do seem to be better without him. So if that is indeed the case, and he's going to want a contract extension this summer, you might as well move on from him and get something for him if you've decided you don't want to be the team. And it's a big if. I don't know exactly where the Hawks are going to be at on that. But if they decide they don't want to be the team to pay Trae Young on his next contract, you've got to try to get something for him at the trade deadline. The challenge is going to be figuring out what team is going to want Trae right now, knowing that they would be in a similar situation where they would have to give him that contract extension. So it'll be interesting to see how the Hawks proceed. But you know, at least defensively, they are significantly better when Trae Young is not out there. And that just may be, you know, the writing on the wall for what the future looks like for them.
Now, to double down and make it even more of a difficult decision, Ryan Russillo on his podcast either today or yesterday said that he spoke with an NBA executive who said the following sentence, quote, "Players hate playing with him." That is a searing indictment of Trae Young, but unfortunately, Trevor, as I'm sure you're well aware, not the first time that sentiment has been brought up around the league to the point where he's been snubbed by his peers for All-Star games and the like. Do you feel like that narrative is further complicating the situation for Trae Young to potentially find a new home?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly going to complicate things. If that is the general sentiment around the NBA, then teams are not going to want to trade for him. You know, we're in a very different world than we were a few years ago under the older collective bargaining agreement. The new one makes it so punitive to have anybody on your roster that does not provide bang for their buck in terms of how much money you're spending on them. So if you're going to spend big money on Trae Young, you have to know that he is going to be a positive on your roster. And that can include not just production on the court, but also the chemistry and do players want to be bought in to play alongside Trae Young, and especially looking at what I've been calling a thunderification of the NBA, the way we're seeing so many defenses play, hyper-aggressive, hyper-athletic, teams gambling for steals in ways we haven't seen before, teams really crashing the boards and going for offensive rebounds. These are trends that we're seeing in the NBA right now that don't necessarily fit Trae Young's game. And if you're a team that is employing a high-pressure defense and is focused on forcing turnovers, that puts more responsibility on the rest of the team if Trae is out there on the floor and is not helping you accomplish those goals. So it's going to be interesting to see what the market looks like. In addition to that, the point guard situation around the NBA, so many teams are already set at the position. It's one of the more fascinating storylines to watch right now because there's no question he's a talented player. But once you start getting into the realm of teams not being sure how they can make him fit, in addition to the contract that he's certainly going to want, it becomes very challenging to figure out what the right move and what the right landing spot for him would be. So how things play out between now and February 5th, one of the biggest storylines, I think, around the NBA with the Hawks and Trae.
The other guy that could be on the move is Kristaps Porzingis. He made his return today, played pretty well, but is there going to be any interest with him as he continues to deal with this illness that's causing him to miss chunks of time?
Yeah, I mean, Kristaps is a totally different scenario, because if you're going to give up something for, first of all, you're not going to be expected to pay the price you would for to get Trae Young. And Trae, you know, technically could be an expiring contract. He could pick up his player option. I would have to imagine he probably just opts out, and then he's a free agent. You got to pay him. Kristaps, though, you know, a $30 million expiring contract with the illness issues that you're looking at with him. I think most teams will look at him as salary matching in a trade. If we want to talk about, you know, an Anthony Davis trade or something like that, he's probably just going to be salary matching. And I think you could have teams trade for him that aren't necessarily looking to keep him long term. He would be more salary relief heading into the future than we would see, you know, certainly from a player like Trae Young. So I hope he can get past the illness stuff, because he truly is a fantastic player when he can be out there on the floor. But there's so much risk baked in right now with only, what, five-ish weeks until the trade deadline. I don't know if that's enough time to dilute any of those concerns around the NBA about the illness situation. So I think if Kristaps is on the move this season, it'll be more of a salary dump situation where teams are trying to get some money off of their books, and the Hawks maybe can add some talent by taking on a longer-term deal. That he's more a almost $31 million expiring contract than Porzingis, the talent himself, in terms of teams trying to trade for him to actually put him on the floor, just because there's so much uncertainty with the situation.
Last one on the Hawks before we look across the NBA landscape as we're talking with our buddy Trevor Lane. Make sure you check out Front Office Show, the pod, and Lakers Nation, where he covers that team day in and day out. Quinn Snyder, he has, I don't want to say escaped criticism, that may be too harsh of a phrase, but he certainly has not bore the brunt of what's gone on in Atlanta the last couple of years since he took over as the head coach. Do you think he's done a good job here in Atlanta? I know there's been a lot of injuries and a lot of, trying to make the best with what you have. But again, the team sort of finds itself in an underachieving fashion right now, Trevor.
Yeah, I think that the injuries and the question in the air about Trae Young, all of that sort of insulates Quinn Snyder from too much criticism in this situation. I think that, you know, before you're going to go and do anything like make a move from a guy who's been known around the NBA as a very good coach for quite a while, you're going to need to have a steady roster around him and give him all the tools that he really needs. And I thought the Hawks did a fine job assembling this roster. I was high on them coming into the season. Now it's looking like they may actually be better without Trae. I'm curious to see what things look like once the dust settles post-trade deadline. If they really do turn the page and move forward into a post-Trae Young future, that's when we can start getting into what's Quinn Snyder's success rate here. Because right now, there's so much context going on around the team that's not necessarily coaching related that it's hard to put too much on the coaching staff themselves. That doesn't mean they're completely absolved from any sort of scrutiny or criticism or anything like that, but just you need some sort of stability in the roster, and you're not going to have that until after we get past the trade deadline or until after we see some type of resolution one way or another on the Trae Young front.
When you look at the conferences here, as we'll take a look around the NBA, Oklahoma City obviously remains the dominant force, but San Antonio lost a couple in a row. Denver got the injury scare with Nikola Jokic. Outside of OKC, it looks like the West, I think for the first time in a while, based on the way that the start of the season has gone in the last couple of years, 2 through 10 looks kind of wide open.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I mean, injuries have been the storyline around the NBA all season. It's been a season plagued by calf injuries specifically that have been hitting so many teams around the league. And now you've got an injury to Nikola Jokic when the Nuggets are already missing Aaron Gordon. They're missing Cam Johnson, Christian Brown. It's been a war of attrition. I mean, the West is going to be extremely tight, I think, all the way through the finish line. And as much as the teams that are playing well are going to rise to the top, it's also going to be the teams that are healthy. An injury here, an injury there, things are so close, could very well make the difference in how the ultimate seeding plays out in this conference. OKC is still the head of the class. They are the team that everybody's chasing. San Antonio has had some success against them recently, 3 wins against them. But everybody else is doing what they can to try to catch up to OKC right now. And we'll see what ultimately that's going to look like in the West. But teams have got to get healthy. There's a lot of parity in the conference. And it's not going to be easy when the dust settles to battle their way through the playoffs. That's the other thing, too, is we're going to see teams making the decision. Do we want to rest some guys? Do we want to see guys, you know, just get guys healthy and worry about seeding later, because everybody is so close talent-wise in this conference. It's going to be a dogfight all the way through. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see the way it all plays out, because one bad week, one good week can send a team either soaring or tumbling in the standings in the West.
With the team you cover daily, the Lakers got off to a red-hot start, but lost their last game. They are negative in the point differential. The Lakers are the only team in the top eight with a negative point differential on the season. That's an interesting stat, and they're 5-5 in their last 10, so what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, they struggle in a big, big way against one specific kind of team, and that is teams with athleticism on the perimeter that force a lot of turnovers. That's the thunderification of the NBA. The teams that are pushing for lots and lots and lots of steals, sometimes to their detriment, that are committing fouls, but they're accepting that they will get called for more fouls. They're accepting that sometimes their defense won't get back the way that they may have tried to a few years ago. Teams are now gambling for steals at a higher rate. They're crashing the offensive glass, and the Lakers, from an athletic perspective, are not able to keep pace. We saw it last night against the Detroit Pistons. We saw it when the Lakers played the Hawks. Athletically, they don't have the wing play to keep up with these teams. So stylistically, when they run into teams with young, athletic, quick players, they just get absolutely crushed. And that's what we've seen against Phoenix. We saw it against San Antonio. We've seen it against OKC. We saw it against Atlanta last night against Detroit. That type of team, the Lakers have a lot of trouble with. And so you've got, they have lost every game they have lost this season. All 11 have been by double digits, and all 11, with the exception of maybe the one game against Golden State, have been to teams that have that characteristic, that have the wings that simply the Lakers do not. And they've been trying to find for years now. We've been having this conversation for 3-4 years about them needing to find defensive wings who are athletic, that can also shoot the ball. That's at the top of the list for every team around the NBA to find. The Lakers clearly do not have those guys, and it puts them at a real disadvantage when they're going up against teams that do have players like that. So that's been the biggest thing, and that's why they've got a negative point differential. When they win, they've been pretty good in close games, but they are getting crushed whenever they play against these teams that are hyper-athletic on the perimeter, and so that's why they have such a negative point differential, because when they lose, they get completely blown out.
What Boston is doing, the Lakers' natural rival, transition here, Trevor, is pretty remarkable. 7-3 in their last 10, 20-12 on the season. Jaylen Brown is almost saying, Jason who? He's averaging 36.5-5, shooting 50% from the field. How surprised are you at the Celtics and what they've been able to do without their superstar?
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised that they are where they are. I mean, the East, we knew going into the season it was going to be wide open with so many teams. You know, even the Celtics themselves, we looked at as taking a step back. But we knew there wasn't necessarily going to be a team that was just going to run away with the Eastern Conference. Nobody's of the quality of a Thunder, of the Oklahoma City Thunder in the East. And so we thought there was a lot of opportunity to move up. Now, the Celtics dropping out of the East was part of what was creating that opportunity. Instead, the Celtics have kind of capitalized on the ability to move up, and they've done a great job. They're hitting threes. They're really defending together. They're doing a fantastic job so far this season. And Jason Tatum probably will come back, you know, this year. I don't know if he'll be at 100%. But even if you get 70% of Jason Tatum back on this team, suddenly they are a real threat. I don't put them in the same class as the Pistons and the Knicks right now, but they are playing some really, really great basketball. They're moving the ball well. They're playing together. And, you know, you've got these teams that were hoping to make this push up, and the Celtics are still sitting right there. So it's been a surprisingly good season, and maybe the lowered expectations helped because nobody assumed or expected them to be where they're at right now. But currently the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they're playing some wonderful basketball currently.
Trevor, real quick before I let you go, you mentioned the Knicks there. We don't like him here in Atlanta, but I think it's hard to argue that the NBA is not better off when the Knicks are competitive.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Knicks, they're going to draw a lot of attention. They are a very talented team. Right now, they're the number one or the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. Jalen Brunson is a fantastic player. They've got the wing play that you need in OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges. Karl Anthony Towns brings an element there. But I really love what Mitch Robinson adds to this team in terms of the offensive glass that helped them out a bunch on Christmas Day. Mitchell Robinson is a really big piece to this team as well. So this Knicks side is going to be a difficult one to deal with. They've been good. The NBA, they just reported today, they're drawing record numbers. Some of that certainly is credited to the Knicks as well as the rest of the league. But Christmas Day was a big win for the NBA, both in terms of television viewership as well as social media engagement. And, you know, the New York Knicks being good certainly doesn't hurt in that endeavor. This is a big market club, and they've got a really interesting team here that wouldn't shock me at all. You know, if when the dust settles, it is the Knicks to come out of the Eastern Conference. Long way to go to get there, and there's a number of teams that can stake their claim to being the team that's going to come out of the East. But I've got the Knicks right up there. If I had to pick between the Knicks and the Pistons right now, even though the Pistons are the one seed, I think I would take the Knicks. It would be a close, fun series, but this Knicks team is very, very good, and I think they're ready for a deep run this year.
Trevor, great stuff. We'll check you out, Front Office Show and Lakers Nation. Have a happy and safe New Year. We'll chat soon.
Thanks. Same to you.
All right, Trevor Lane there, one of my favorite NBA insiders. This Trae Young thing, man. Oren, an executive in the NBA, told Ryan Russillo, quote, "Players hate playing with Trae Young." Wow. That is a scathing indictment, but unfortunately not the first time we've heard something along those lines be echoed around NBA circles. So we'll see what happens. All right, coming up next, you want a national perspective on what the Falcons should do? Well, I got that for you in spades when one of my favorite NFL insiders joins Matt Verderam next. Don't miss it.